This is Everything is Workable, a series of podcasts and blog posts that examine how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. My name is Caitlin Hatch, and I'm a creative polymath, which is a nice short way of saying I'm a designer, artist, animator, and published author. My purpose in life is to inspire curiosity, to inspire people to let go of the limited ideas that they have about themselves and their experience. Through the posts and podcasts of Everything is Workable, I hope to share some insight into what this means and give you some ideas of how to make your world so much bigger. I'll have various different guests to share their stories, as well as sharing my own, all with the aim of seeing everything as workable, even the most uncomfortable situations. Week, I'm going to revisit the topic of my first podcast and go a bit deeper into meditation. In modern day psychology, mindfulness is used synonymously for meditation. But meditation is the technique, whilst mindfulness is the result. And this message seems to be getting lost. And mindfulness is really being treated as a fad. I have to admit that this is a topic I get a bit riled up about. I came across an article one day about how a professor from Oxford stated that people shouldn't do mindfulness practice because thinking was important and it was dangerous to encourage people not to think. I squeaked quite audibly at this and had a good old rant in the comments about the misconception that meditation was about not thinking. I can give you a wonderful list of things meditation is not, and top of that list, it's not about not thinking. Is not about transcending our experience either. It's also not about getting rid of anything. It's not about achieving a state of calm and relaxation. That can happen, but that's not what it's about. It's actually very helpful to know what something isn't. And in my experience, having a sense of no, it's not that, about a lot of the stuff that I talk about on this show has been immensely helpful for me, because generally what it is ineffable, incapable of being expressed or described in words. The challenge is that something quite beneficial, profound, and capable of making genuine, lasting transformations gets all muddled up in misconceptions, myths, and mumbo jumbo. I tried to tackle this in a blog entry on my previous blog, She Smiled the Widest Smile, and then I turned that entry into one of the sections of my book, Wise at Any Age. So, looking back and rereading what I wrote, I had a pretty good basis of understanding about meditation, but I still wasn't quite getting it. Life is a constant teacher, and I don't believe that I'll ever stop learning, so I'm not saying that I do get it now, but I do have a much clearer understanding about meditation and mindfulness. So, to begin, I'm going to be very clear that in this podcast, when I say meditation, I mean the technique, sitting in a particular way and using the breath as the focus. When I say mindfulness, I mean one of the many results of the technique. When we meditate, we are habituating ourselves to being mindful. You don't have to meditate to experience mindfulness. Mindfulness could also be called awareness, although arguably mindfulness is slightly different to awareness. This is something that many teachers of meditation will speak about, and I've come to understand mindfulness as our capacity for the mind to know what's going on, while our awareness is the capacity to see that our mind knows what's going on. Ultimately, though, the result of meditation is that we do become more mindful, more aware, more present to what's going on right then and there. And you don't have to meditate to experience mindfulness or know what it is. For example, people who do sports, they get into the zone. That's mindfulness. The hobbyist who makes model airplanes and can spend an hour very focused on gluing very tiny, teeny bits together really precisely without any distraction. That's mindfulness. the knitter who gets into a rhythm of knit and purl, counting stitches in rows for a perfectly even pattern. That's mindfulness. The person who comes home from work and goes to the kitchen to cook a meal as a way to shake off the day, carefully chopping, dicing, prepping food, and being entirely absorbed in the activity. That is mindfulness. We all have these experiences of mindfulness in anything we do with the fullness of our mind's attention, without distraction and thinking about the past, or fantasizing or planning for the future. We are thinking, but we are thinking about the task at hand, the placement of our teammates and where the ball is going to go next, for example, or the steadiness of our hand as we glue together the fuselage of a model airplane, or the clicking of our knitting needles and exactly how much wool is left on the roll when we need to switch to a new one, or the weight of the knife in our hand and the size and shape of the onion that we're chopping. So mindfulness isn't a state in which we do not think. It is a state in which our thoughts are specific to the task at hand, and the task at hand is the focus of our attention. In this article, which miffed me so much, the professor also stated that mindfulness was selfish and we should look out for each other more. This, I'm going to admit, I'm going to try and stay calm about it, but this was the bit that irked me the most. Because one of the key aspects of meditation, as it's taught in Buddhism, is the cultivation of compassion. Compassion, along with mindfulness, is a direct result of meditation. But let me explain. When we meditate, we're sitting with our experience. To be mindful of something we enjoy is quite natural and easy to do, especially if something that we do when we feel really stressed out, like coming home and cooking to unwind after a long day at work. I know that cooking is one of those activities that I really enjoy. It brings me into the present moment, and it also leads to one of my favorite activities, which is eating. But have you ever tried being mindful, being totally present with your experience when it's unpleasant? Have you ever tried to stick with your mind when someone has just insulted you, for example, or you're stuck in a traffic jam that really seems endless, or maybe you've just been dumped by the person that you were dating? Generally, in this case, we don't want to be present. We jump into storylines in our heads, like about how wrong a person was for saying that insulting thing and how we're going to go about getting back at them. Or actually we think, oh, maybe they were right. And then we create this giant list of all the things we don't like about ourselves and how terrible we are and how much everyone else must also dislike us. We spin off into a storyline that we can then carry on for days, weeks, even years. This is all very mindless. Not as in stupid, although it is pretty foolish as a response, but as in we do not see how we make things worse because we are so unwilling to be present for the uncomfortable things in our lives. Meditation is a practice we learn to habituate ourselves to being present, even when it's uncomfortable. Now, you might be asking why exactly we'd like to be mindful, present, aware, when it's uncomfortable. Wouldn't that make the discomfort even more intense, even worse, last longer? Well, no. Because here's the whole compassion bit of this. I said a lot about what meditation isn't. Well, here's something that it is. Meditation is a process of making friends with ourselves. Genuine friendship. Like the kind of friend who's got your back no matter what, but who will also tell you what it's like. Like, they'll tell you as it is when you really need to hear it. The sort of friend who is totally honest with you, but out of love and care. The sort of friend who has seen you at your worst and your best and every state in between. And they're still there for you because you've seen them at their worst and their best and everything in between. And you accept their humanness as much as they accept yours. That kind of friend. Meditation is something we do with kindness and care and with the knowledge that we are human and that there's nothing wrong with being human. As my very wise and wonderful fiancé says, your mind is not a problem to fix. When we practice meditation, we become more mindful of the fullness of our experience, and the result is that we become more tender-hearted and start to see how shared our experience of being human is. So the more mindful we are, the more we show up for ourselves, the more we can show up for others and the more compassionate we become. I am speaking from experience when I say all of this, which is great. And I actually put a lot of emphasis on the importance of experience. But there's also scientific data to back this up, which is my trump card to professors who make blanket statements about something they've obviously never actually studied. Sarah Lazar, a neuroscientist at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School, is one of the scientists to take all the anecdotal claims about the benefits of meditation and the resulting mindfulness and test them. And she's not the only one. There is a lot of science behind the benefit of meditation. Feel free to go and do a Google, seriously. Look up scholarly articles. In fact, I insist that you do as soon as this podcast is over, which is just a few more minutes. But I digress. Lazar's studies don't yet show exactly how much someone should practice to feel the benefit, but they definitely show that practicing meditation is beneficial. The resulting mindfulness actually changes the brain, and people who meditate are less stressed, better at interpersonal interactions, and have more empathy and compassion for others. Lazar does state that having a teacher is important because meditation is simple as a technique, but far more complex as a practice, which is something that I did touch on in that very first podcast I did. And I back her up on this 100% about the teacher, really. There are a lot of brilliant teachers out there. My two primary teachers are Annie Pema Chodron, through books, and I have a voracious appetite for listening to recordings of her talks. So I've not met her personally. I have gone to see her speak in person and got to ask her a question, but I don't work with her one-on-one. But just reading her material is immensely beneficial, and there is a lot of it. More formally, I am a student of Elizabeth Mathis Namgal, and will be working with her personally. But I did cut my teeth learning how to meditate from my psychologist, who was brilliant. You can find lots of therapists who know about the science of meditation and apply it in their therapy, in their practice. They will definitely give you some really good guidance. But I also learned by reading a book by Sharon Salzberg. I believe it was Faith, which was really interesting. And I specifically with that one learned the meditation practice of metta, which is also translated as loving kindness or sometimes maitri, depending on who's teaching it, which is a different kind of meditation. But Sharon Salzberg, another really, really good resource. I also know there are a lot of people who really find Eckhart Tolle works for them. He doesn't work for me, but he's got a very large community of students and is definitely worth checking out. And to that end, finding the right teacher for you is really important. There are lots of teachers out there. If you come across one and they just really don't work for you, that's fine. Go and find another one. Generally, the right one will be really obvious when you've found them. Another great one that I'm going to recommend, again, he doesn't really work for me, but for those of you who are definitely looking for a scientific backing, Jon Kabat-Zinn. He has loads of letters after his name and has led some of the most groundbreaking studies specific to the effect that meditation has with helping people to recover from depression. I would definitely say that the Mindful Way Through Depression is his book that's probably the most well-known. I don't quote me on that, but again, he's another great teacher. So a good teacher is important. I could argue that possibly there's a lack of good teachers, and that's what's led to so many misconceptions in mainstream media. But really, I think it's just mainstream media not really doing their work and finding these teachers. It's poor journalism. I just named five brilliant teachers. I could easily do an entire podcast just listing great teachers and the books and talks that they have and how to find each of them. I could probably do many podcasts, actually, for fantastic resources of how to learn meditation and different people you can learn it from. One final point. as with anything that I'm going to present in this show and just anything in life, really, this is not a magic fix-all, and I don't want to purport it as such. And that is one of the big problems of mindfulness and the way it's presented in media. Not problems of mindfulness, but problems of the way it's presented. It does get put out there as this miracle thing. It's not. It's not a miracle thing. I do believe that it would benefit everybody, and anyone can try it and anyone can do it. But to live well, we need to approach our lives holistically, taking into account everything from what we choose to eat, to how much sleep we get, to finding talking therapies and making sure that we exercise regularly. But as I said in that very first episode, there is not a single human being on the planet who would not benefit from meditation. But don't take my word for it. Go and find a teacher. I just listed five. I could give you so many more, but go and do some research. Give it a go and Google some of those brilliant articles about the science behind meditation. Be a scientist yourself. See what happens when you decide to sit down and make friends with yourself genuinely, 100%, no matter what. Thank you for listening to Everything is Workable, a Funwolf Creations production. If you have a question you'd like to ask, a topic that you'd like me to tackle, or if you'd like to become a contributor, you can get in touch with me through www.vast-skythinking.com by visiting the Everything is Workable blog. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.